Hello everyone, this is Leon Sanchez, and we will be beginning now. Recording has started, I believe, so can we just have confirmation that we actually have the recording started? Okay, so we have the recording started, and welcome everyone to this CCWG and accountability meeting number 95. We're 5 short from 100, so if we're still alive, we'll make it through the 100 call, and we're just a few days before our face-to-face in Helsinki, and as usual, we will be holding the roll call with those in the other connect room, and I would like to call now for anyone that is on the phone bridge that hasn't been able to join the other connect room to please state their name so we can add you to roll call. Okay, so hearing no one on the phone bridge, then the roll call is based on the attendance of the AW Connect room. And by now, if you haven't filed your statement of interest, we definitely urge you and encourage you to file your statement of interest. Please feel free to approach a staff member if you need any help on filing your statement of interest. And with this, I would now turn the call to my co-chair, Thomas Rickert, for the next agenda item.
Thanks very much, Leon, and hello, everyone. This is Thomas Rickert speaking. The next item on the agenda is Articles of Incorporation. And as you know, with our proposal, we primarily address changes that were required to ICANN's bylaws. But in fact, next to the bylaws, that there is another document governing ICANN as an organization, and those are the Articles of Incorporation. So they've also undergone some changes, and since there's been some interest in this group, we're going to dedicate roughly 20 minutes, maybe 15 minutes introduction, and then Q&A to the changes that have been administered to the Articles of Incorporation. So our group, number one, understands what's been done, and number two has the opportunity to ask questions, should there be any. Before we dive into substance, and before I give the floor to Steve Del Bianco, who has kindly volunteered to show us through these changes, let me go on record once again thanking all of you for this awesome work that all of you did. And we've now been attested by the U.S. government, by NTIA, that what we've done was of good quality because they've approved our set of recommendations. So again, thanks to all of you. I'm sure that we will have an opportunity to celebrate this accordingly when hopefully this whole process is over. So at the moment, this is just another pleasant milestone that our group and the other groups that have been working on the whole proposal have achieved. So kudos to all of you for your commitment, for the quality of work that you delivered in the working group with our staff and also the others that have been working with us. So with that, let me now turn to Steve. Steve, I hope you're ready. And maybe you can speak to the Articles of Incorporation and their changes a little bit.
Thanks, Thomas. It's Steve Del Bianco for the transcript. The Articles of Incorporation, as you all know, were one of these foundational documents that the CCWG discussed several times. Our most important point about the Articles of Incorporation is that we wanted to change the key provision about what ICANN had to do to amend the Articles of Incorporation, in other words, to treat them as if they were at a higher level even than fundamental. And we were able to do that with one of the key amendments. But in addition, there were multiple other amendments that were made to the articles to make them consistent with mission and core values. And then our council and ICANN council made a few other adjustments to the Articles of Incorporation that they have explained in a document that I believe Brenda circulated earlier today. There's a ICANN public comment period that is out right now until the 6th of July, which is shortly after we leave the Helsinki meeting, and that is a place where interested parties and stakeholders can put comments in on the restated articles of incorporation. But like the restated bylaws, our main objective was to see whether or not the articles faithfully reflect the CCWG's proposal and report. And it's up to you to make a comment on that individually. Let me ask Thomas, does the CCWG co-chairs intend for the CCWG to file a comment on the restated articles like we did on the bylaws? That's a question for you, Thomas, Leon, and Matthew.
Thanks very much, Steve. I guess that's something for our group to determine, but I think it would be a good idea to do exactly the same as we did for the bylaws, to confirm whether or not the articles of incorporation are adequately reflected or adequately reflect our proposals. So I think it would be good for our group to go on record with that.
All right. So thank you, Thomas. And I want to clarify that the slide being displayed is incorrect. It's claiming that the public comment period ends the 22nd of July, but the public comment period on the articles ends the 6th of July, according to ICANN's own website. So I think that's an inconsistency that we should remedy. I believe it is the 6th of July, not the 22nd. Does anyone on staff have any information on that 22nd date? Brett Schaefer is agreeing with my reading of the website, but I'm wondering whether staff knows something that the website doesn't. All right, hearing nothing, we'll proceed as if it's the 6th of July for now. I suppose it would be constructive to bring up the document that Brenda circulated today, which was a side-by-side explanation of exactly what changes have been made to the articles. And the first change in paragraph 2 was to take out the notion of the corporation having an initial agent. And I can see that that's not necessarily anymore when it was initially filed. So this was something that our council came up with, or ICANN's council, and I think that that's fine. Are there any questions with respect to number 2 there, the removal of the corporation's initial agent? All right, great. Seeing no hands, why don't we jump to the next paragraph? It was paragraph 2. It becomes paragraph 2. Any further, they changed it to future United States tax code, future Internal Revenue Service, and I think that's just a correction, typographical correction. If you'll scroll to the next page, you'll see that an entire section of text describing ICANN's mission, what it shall do for its purposes, and replacing it with a statement that the global public interest may be determined from time to time by the multi-stakeholder community through an inclusive bottom-up multi-stakeholder community process by carrying out the mission set forth in the bylaws of the corporation. So this was added per our proposal in Annex 1. Are there any questions or comments from CCWG participants about the new paragraph 2? All right, seeing no hands. We go to the old paragraph 4, new paragraph 3. We restate that the corporation is going to operate in a manner consistent with the articles. I think that's Christopher Wilkinson, CW. Chris, you had a question. Go ahead.
No, complete your presentation of Article 3, and then I have a comment.
Great. So these edits here were to make the articles track to the bylaws, Section 1.2, and the quote was found in our CCWG proposal, and staff has indicated here that the quote from the articles is slightly inaccurate. I'm not actually sure what that means about inaccurate. Would welcome an explanation from counsel that is on the call. But the key here was to complete the language by suggesting it has to be consistent with the articles and bylaws for the benefit of the community, and it does suggest that we carry out our activities in conformity with relevant principles of international law and international conventions and applicable local law through open and transparent processes. So most of the black text remains. There's only a few things that are changed in that text. So Christopher, you're first, and then Cavus.
Thank you. Just a quick remark about applicable local law. I'm glad to see that this text has been maintained. 20 years ago, nearly, I wrote it. But I think it would be helpful if we had legal advice with respect to Sidley and Company and from non-U.S. lawyers as to what exactly that means in practice. Because when I wrote that, the purpose of including the reference to applicable local law was specifically to ensure that ICANN would respect applicable European and national law, for example, but not exclusively, on privacy. And for many years, we have had an ongoing problem with the staff and with GNSO, who have declined to admit that the reference to applicable local law includes European privacy law. I don't invite a discussion of European privacy law in this context, co-chairs, but I did want to make that point from our point of view. Thank you.
Christopher, the discussion of Workstream 2 on jurisdiction would seem to be a place that explanations such as you seek could be worked out, because the jurisdiction is the broader topic of which laws have jurisdiction over ICANN's activities. And I'll note that registrars who believe they're subject to the privacy restrictions of their own jurisdictions have been routinely applying for waivers of who is disclosure requirements. So my guess is that this is an ongoing process as ICANN discovers how it reacts to applicable law and what jurisdiction they're under. But I don't believe that requires a change in the text you see on the screen. So I'm not sure if what you just asked was for further discussions, or did you ask for a change to this language?
No, I'm not asking for a change in the language. I wrote it in 1998, but I do think you're right that the discussion of that this would be relevant under the discussion of jurisdiction. Particularly, and as it so happens, I've just completed the arrangements to be in Helsinki on Sunday. But I think it would be very useful if we discuss under jurisdiction these kinds of practical implementation issues, as I've mentioned in another submission to the mailing list. I think it is not helpful at this point in time to open up an international discussion of the jurisdiction applicable to ICANN itself.
Great. Appreciate
it. Before we move on, let's just confirm that Christopher doesn't have an issue with the language as you see on the screen. And I think that at the moment our task is to check whether we or our individuals in our group or our group as a whole has difficulties with the changes made to the Articles of Incorporation. So this doesn't seem to
be
the case. So I'm looking forward to discussing the jurisdiction topic, the applicable law topic with Christopher and others more, starting in Helsinki. We had a hand from Cavus. Then I note a question, Steve. I'm not sure whether you've seen that from
there's an important one from David McCauley on whether the word applicable should be applying to the words international conventions and to local law. It might well be that principles of applicable international law. I'm not sure where applicable belongs in that sentence. I think David McCauley is making the point that it would be all three, international law, international conventions, and local law. So, Thomas, if you are leaning towards having the CCWG come up with a comment on this, that would be an appropriate time for the CCWG as a whole to say that applicable should cover all three. But do you, on the limited time available, want to discuss whether applicable should apply to all three on this call today?
Well, I think what we should do is maybe give an opportunity to ICANN Legal or
Harley or Rosemary and team to expand on why the word applicable has been relocated in that sentence and what the consequences of that will be. And I guess that will help us understand better whether a comment should be made to ask for a clarification. I hope that this is acceptable to you. Greg, I see that your hand was raised, but I would suggest that we go to Caboose now, and then we give Greg the opportunity to speak.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. Welcome, Caboose.
Thank you very much. Good day. I think we could not simply say applicable law. It is better to spell it out what we mean by applicable law, at least. This is one question, one comment, and the reason I raised the hand was not this, was that the further in the number two has been changed to future. We have already future in the first part, any reference in these articles to the code, that, so on and so forth. We have future once. So why we change further to the future? It is different. Further means additional, but not necessarily future. So we should be cautious not to change further to future. Thank you.
Thanks, Caboose. Let's take note of that, and let's allow ICANN legal or the legal advisor to speak to that point as well. Steve has mentioned in his introduction that this was a typo or a language correction. Let's hear more about that and then determine whether we need to file a comment on that. Greg, you have meanwhile lowered your hand. Did you still want to speak? Steve, let's go to Steve and then Greg.
Thank you, Thomas. To Cavusa's point, the sentences where future appears are different sentences. One regards the IRS code, and the second sentence is a clarification that any reference in the articles to the code is more comprehensive, and it applies to future U.S. code as well. So I believe that the word future could appear twice. That wouldn't be a typo, and those are not redundant but distinct sentences. But we'll wait for ICANN Legal to help to clarify that as well. And back to you.
Thanks very much. Greg, you have lowered your hand. Did you still want to speak? Or I suggest that you jump in.
Greg, I've made some remarks in the chat. I think things don't need an intervention at this point for me.
Thanks very much, Greg.
Thomas, in the chat as well, we've had indication from several folks that may have scrolled off of your chat now that the new text, that it's in blue, under the new section 2, does have the word may. In terms of the public interest, may be determined from time to time by multi-stakeholder community. And a few folks have noticed that in other places in the articles, we're much more definitive by saying shall. In fact, they've been in the same paragraph. There's shall is in several places. So there's been several folks who have said it should be shall be determined by the multi-stakeholder community as opposed to may. Is that something worth the CCWG clarifying?
Okay, I suggest that we give ICANN Legal and our legal advisors the opportunity to speak to those now 3 points. But before we ask them to speak, Greg, you've now raised your hand. So if you want to speak, please do so now.
Thanks, Greg Shatton. Just to respond to that latest point, if we were to change may to shall on that point, we would be adding a new requirement to the Articles of Incorporation that the public interest be determined by the multi-stakeholder community from time to time. At right now, there is no such commitment. All this is saying is that if it what it says now basically is that if it is determined from time to time, then it will be determined by the global multi-stakeholder community. But I would not add shall, because then that adds a commitment that we would actually do this. I think that's beyond the remit of what we've decided to do. So So I think we need to be somewhat conservative in the changes in that regard. And just lastly, I would say that the whole from time to time is something I see all the time in legal documents. It's not a colloquialism in terms of this kind of legal drafting. Thanks.
Greg, thanks, it's so Steve. Much, Greg. You quite correctly note that the word shall does appear in the same sentence. It's actually in the top of the box there, that the corporation shall pursue the charitable purposes on the Internet. As such, public interest may be determined. So the shall is already part of the sentence as to what ICANN's obligations are, and you're suggesting that public interest is determined, if it is determined from time to time by the multi-stakeholder community. So Greg makes an argument that may is the correct word in the second place in that sentence, given that shall appears above. Back to you, Thomas.
Thanks very much. Thanks, Steve. I wanted to give the opportunity to someone from the legal side of things to speak to this. I'm not saying that Greg wasn't speaking to the legal side of things, but I had offered ICANN Legal to speak as well as Holly and Rosemary. So please get ready. I'm going to ask you after we've heard Brett. Brett.
Oh, sorry. I disagree with that to some extent. I agree that the global public interest shouldn't be a habitual thing, nor should it be compelled to be determined at any particular point. But when it is determined, I think it should be unequivocally clear that that determination of what is and what is not the global public interest, as far as ICANN is concerned, that it be determined through a bottom-up multi-stakeholder process that was listed in the CCWG report as a requirement. And I think we need to be crystal clear that there is no alternative to that process in determining global public interest for ICANN's purposes than through a bottom-up multi-stakeholder process. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Brett. And now, as indicated earlier, I'm not sure whether, Sam, you want to speak or whether Rosemary or Holly want to speak. So if I could kindly ask you to raise your hand if you want to volunteer to speak to those topics. Sam, please.
Hi. Thank you, everyone. This is Sam Eisner from ICANN Legal. Starting off with the shall versus may item, I think that it's an issue of sentence construction. That, as I believe it was Brett who just pointed out, or I think in the last intervention, there shall in the earlier part of the sentence. So ICANN has to operate in terms of promoting the global public interest and the operational stability of the Internet. As such, global public interest may be determined from time to time by the multi-stakeholder community. That may, where it falls right after the global public interest, is more of a sentence construction that's not about the permissive versus mandatory language, but it's used to describe how it will be determined, and so we can take a look at the sentence construction, because I think I'm trying to find the reference in the report right now. I can't put my fingers on it, but I think that this is drafted very closely aligned to the report, and we understand the intention is that it's up to the community to define the global public interest through an inclusive bottom-up multi-stakeholder process, and that is the definition that ICANN is to apply. So I think we're saying the same things here. It's just that the use of may isn't really being used in the same way for as the may versus shall, as the permissive versus mandatory. So we can take a look at that.
Sam, it's Steve. Not being a lawyer, I feel it's okay to make the suggestion, but neither may nor shall are necessary if you just said as the global public interest as determined from time to time.
Yeah, I think that kind of I think that's exactly what I was thinking of, something like shall or is or
yeah, as determined.
Okay. As determined is determined, however. But I think you're on the exact right line there, Steve.
Great. Now,
we don't create legal room and we don't create an obligation.
Great. Go ahead, Sam, Thomas. If you could probably get back to the list on this topic and offer these thoughts in writing, I guess that would be great so that we can then determine whether there's still the need to ask for changes to the language. Sandra, was another point with respect to the word applicable law. Could you please elaborate on that a little bit as well?
Sure. So the word applicable was moved from applicable international conventions to in front of applicable local law to make the sentence read a little bit more closely with what the reach of the sentence could actually be. So if you look at the new language, it says, carrying out its activities in conformity with relevant principles of international law and international conventions and applicable local law. So using the word applicable before international conventions is a little bit strange to use for ICANN as it exists today, because international conventions tend to be, by definition, conventions between states, and so they're not necessarily applicable to ICANN at all because ICANN's a private entity. And so with the movement of applicable to applicable local law and only modifying that, it then brings in that idea that ICANN carries out its activities in conformity with relevant principles of international conventions. So it makes it a bit of a cleaner read, because it's hard to actually make the statement today that there are international conventions that are applicable to ICANN. Could be the case if some countries were to make a treaty that is directly applicable to ICANN, who knows, but that isn't where we are right now. So that was the reason for the move. And then
should applicable be in front of international law as well? Should applicable be applying to international law, not just local law?
Well, as we've seen in the discussion on the list recently, there aren't really international laws per se that are there. It's about principles of international law, those types of principles that carry over. And so you want to bring the principles in, but that concept of a body of international law that you would say is directly applicable to ICANN or any organization, it would be really hard to find. So I think that the wording is cleaner, and it doesn't actually change the impact of what this means, and it doesn't change the meaning of it or the ability of people to rely on this phrase when they go, for example, to an IRP or to a court.
Thanks very much, Sam. That's very helpful.
And then the other one was the further versus future.
That's right.
Yes, exactly.
Yes. So I think that there's very little distinction between the use of further or future here. If the change to the wording causes concern to people in the group, I don't think that there's a very big legal reason to not change it back. We already have reference above. If there are future code changes or future laws that we need to identify, we can do that. And if we need to identify further or additional codes within within the articles, that's what it allows us to do. So that one's not – it's really not a material change. It's a stylistic issue that if the CCWG has concerns of, I think we could take on either one.
Thanks very much, Sam. Someone is producing some noises, so please mute your microphones when you're not speaking. Chavuz, you had another point to make? Or is it just confirming the points that you've made in the chat?
Yeah. What I read in the chat is that we should not put applicable before international law and international convention, because in that case, we have to see which international law and which international convention is applicable, whereas for local law, we have to find out which local law is applicable. So retain as it is and do not change the place. And further, I suggest to retain it but not change it to future. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Cavus. Actually, your intervention on applicable laws or international treaties have received support in the chat. So in the essence of time, what I suggest we do is that all of you take the notes of this meeting and let this sit with you for a while. Step back and think whether you actually need a change or whether, in the light of the explanation given by team members as well as by Sam, you say that you're okay with the version that you see in the Adobe room now. And then let's continue the conversation on the list. For the time being, I would suggest that we wait for Sam's additional written contributions to the list. And I would suggest that Steve now shows us through the remaining paragraphs of the draft articles.
Thanks, Thomas. We'll move on briskly now. The paragraph, old paragraph 5, new paragraph 4 references a series of items, prohibitions on ICANN, subject to other than Article 8, which has been stricken. So other than Article 8, and Article 8 was about the dissolution of the corporation. So legal has suggested that we strike that so that it says notwithstanding any other provision of these articles. And then it goes on to indicate activities, prohibitions on what it shall do, shall not do. When you get to D on page 3, the words members is being stricken, and that's consistent with what legal has done in the old paragraph 6, new paragraph 5, where we would say the corporation shall be personally liable to the corporation or its members should the corporation elect to have members in the future. So the rationale given to strike that is that at least our current set of bylaws, the ones we've just approved, don't add members to ICANN, but instead we use the designator facility. And yet, it may not be necessary to strike members, since we don't have members, in the sense of leaving a vestige of members there so that if it should become necessary in some distant future to revert to the member organization that most California nonprofits use, these vestiges would still be there. So I don't see it as necessary to strike members, but I do understand why legal is eager to get it out of there. So the members discussion is on two places. It's item D on page 3, for those of you following along in Adobe. But it also appears on the very next page where members is stricken in old paragraph 6, new paragraph 5. Cavus, I see your hand up, and Schaefer has a question about deleting the old Article 5E, which is about disqualified persons. Let's wait on that, Brett, until we finish this discussion of striking any vestige of members from the bylaws. Cavus?
I'm talking of members. I would suggest that we retain members and put slash obligatory director to see, according to circumstances, maybe members or maybe director or maybe both. Thank you.
Thank you, Cavus. And Brett Schaefer has asked for an explanation on why 5E was deleted. Now, Brett, before we dive into that, there's a pretty extensive explanation for 5E, where it indicates that there is no legal requirement. I'm speaking of the text you see right at the bottom of page 3. So, Cavus, Brett Schaefer, if you will read that explanation, if there's part of that that you need clarification on, we'll certainly put it to the counsel who's on the call. But they've suggested that there's no legal requirement related to this, and they recommend deleting it now. So, Thomas, I'm not clear about how the group feels on the retention of the vestige of members in two places or not. Cavus is the only one to speak up so far and suggested retaining members. I believe I agree with Cavus on this one, but no one else giving an opinion would indicate that we don't have significant momentum to retain the two vestigial inclusions of member. I see Brett Schaefer's hand is up. Brett.
Thank you. This is an explanation of basically saying that it doesn't apply to ICANN. It doesn't explain why the requirement was there in the first place. Clearly, NTIA had a reason for including this provision in 1998. I would appreciate some kind of explanation or background as to why they thought it was necessary to include it in 1998. The explanation also says that it doesn't apply to ICANN because it is not a, a private corporation. But is there a similar provision under the IRS code that would apply to ICANN as a nonprofit corporation? And therefore, would the original intent or the reason behind NTIA's inclusion of this apply to ICANN going forward? And is there a similar provision in the code for nonprofit corporations that should be included in here to replace this rather than just deleting it? So that's the kind of explanation analysis I was hoping to get from this. Thank you.
Thanks very
much. We have the advantage of Becky Burr being with us, and Becky was present at the creation. So either Becky or Sam, if you have something to say to Brett on this.
I'll defer to Sam and then follow up.
And this is Sam Eisner again from ICANN Legal. I was not with the organization in 98 when the initial articles were drafted, so I can't speak to the intent for why ICANN and its council and the community that was involved in the work then included this provision. However, there are some historical facts that help show some of the how this fell along, because there are different, and Rosemary, if you're on the phone, feel free to interrupt me at any point, but there are different types of 501c3 organizations. And so there's a difference between a private foundation and a public charity. And at the point in time that ICANN was incorporated, ICANN did not have, I don't believe at ICANN's inception it was identified as a public charity, but ICANN has since achieved public charity status. And there's a difference between how public charities and private foundations are viewed under the tax code. And so that's why we have, you see this distinction here between private foundations and public charities. And so just thinking back, and again, I was not there, so I don't have the legislative history of this in my head, but there's a very clear reason why we would have articles drafted initially that included provisions that relate to a private foundation status, because they were drafted before ICANN received a determination from the IRS that it could operate as a public charity instead. And so that's one reason why this may have needed to be in the articles earlier, which also supports the reason that it doesn't have to be in here now. And private foundations have a lot of other things that go around them, because private foundations tend to be operated by or very often are operated by those people who might be qualified as disqualified persons under the bylaw or under the tax code. And as the note that Sidley and Adler put in place here, you know, it's not the same now within ICANN, and the leadership structure and everything is very different. And then add in the fact that we have our conflict of interest policies and other things that would always mitigate against having a disqualified person sitting at the controlling level of ICANN.
Thanks very much.
Thank you, Sam.
That's very helpful. I hope that Sam's explanations remove concerns. So if you could please give an indication. Yes, you can. Please.
Is there any reason why you could not refer to the provisions in the code talking about conflict of interest and other provisions preventing self-dealing and other matters that were involved in the IRS code section 4958 that would apply to a 501c3 that ICANN is now identified as? Why not just replace this provision to apply similar protections and similar requirements? Why delete it and instead rely on ICANN's conflict of interest policy, which don't have the same standing in either the AOI or in terms of the bylaws or in terms of California law? Why wouldn't you want to have the maximum types of protections in place to prevent those types of misgovernance or misconduct?
Sam?
So we could surely take a look at that, and we'd look at that alongside Sidley and Adler with that. But there always is the base item that ICANN being organized under and being subject to laws makes ICANN required to operate in conformity with those laws. And here, clearly, the IRS tax code as well as California law are in no way could ever be argued to not be applicable. The articles make them applicable. And so we don't need to add provisions to our articles that provide those sorts of belts and suspenders, but we can clearly, we can also take this back and look to see if there are any other applicable items that are referenced in the public charity sections that that might help replace some of the concerns that Brett's raising on this one.
So can I suggest, Sam, that maybe you circle back with Holly and Rosemary to see whether we can maybe just keep it, because that would likely make it unnecessary for our group to comment, because I see some support for what you said, but also some other comments suggesting that we should keep this. So if there were no harm in keeping it, then maybe that could be an easy solution. Sam or Steve, you asked earlier about the deletion of the word member, and while I haven't put myself in the queue for the discussion then, reading this as a non-native speaker, if we are a sole designator organization, finding the word member in there would likely confuse me. And so I think if we move to a different concept for the organization, then maybe it wouldn't be a good thing to keep language that does not accurately reflect the status of the organization. And Steve, as you mentioned, it may well be that at some future point in time the organization chooses to change, then I guess that would be going along with another change of the articles and the bylaws anyway, so that those tweaks could then be made if so necessary. Brett, I'm not sure whether that's a new hand. If so, please do speak. You've now lowered your hand. And I would suggest that we now move to the next point, and for this point as well, let's wait for some more feedback from Sam after she had the opportunity to consult with her colleagues, and then we continue the discussion on this. But now for the next point, Steve.
Thank you, Thomas. There's only really one point left, and it has to do with the decision-making power to either amend these articles or to dispose, have a series of transactions that would sell all or substantially all of ICANN's assets. The old paragraph 9 in the articles required two-thirds of the board of directors and two-thirds of the members of ICANN voting on it if the corporation were to have members. So pursuant to our report, our recommendations, we've changed that to three-quarters of ICANN's board and the consent, the written consent of the empowered community instead. So the empowered community language, which was one of the main things we wanted to do to the articles, has been brought in, and we've eliminated then in old paragraphs 8 and 9, we've eliminated reference to two-thirds of the board and two-thirds of members. So I think that this is a faithful representation of what we had in our report, and a lot of us were anxious to have this in the articles before the transition, as opposed to waiting until after, because we felt this was particularly important. If the articles were to be changed, that the articles needed to let the empowered community have affirmative consent to any change in these articles at all. Now, I will note that the empowered community makes its decision as to whether it's going to give approval according to Article 26 in the bylaws. The articles themselves don't dictate how it is we as the empowered community reach a decision whether we have decided to bless a change to the articles. So I don't believe that requires much explanation, and it is very consistent with the report we put out. So with that, Thomas, I turn it back over to you.
Thanks very much, Steve. Caboose, you've raised your hand.
Please, Kabuz.
That it is a strong reason and valid reason to delete the portion or its member. In fact, because of the reason that's given, should the corporation elect to have members in the future? Why we should have a so narrow thinking of today that we don't have members? It is sort of provision for future, and what is the harm to retain that? Thank you.
Thanks, Kabuz. Any further interventions? Okay, so then I would suggest that we don't take a decision today on whether or not we're going to file any substantive comments, rather than indicating that we are supportive of the changes without having seen, you know, the minutes of this call, extra information from Sam, and a discussion on the list. So I guess, you know, even though we've spent more time on this agenda item than previously planned, I think this was an important and good discussion on an important topic. But now let's move to the next agenda item. Before we do that, let me thank Steve for so ably helping us with this, and also Sam from ICANN Legal for offering all the explanations that you gave. So let's now move on to agenda item number 3, and that's going to be led by Mathieu.
Thank you very much, Thomas. This is Mathieu Veil speaking. Hello, everyone. So if you remember our last call, we had a discussion about budget for Workstream 2. That led to a number of amendments to the initial proposal, which went back to the PCST, the Product Cost Staffing Team, support team, sorry, led by Bernie, and there was a lot of background work done to make sure the different stakeholders around the budget could be aligned around the proposals, and Bernie is going to introduce us on the latest update on these discussions, and I think Bernie's got a lot of good news. So, Bernie, you have the floor.
Thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes, Bernie.
Okay, excellent. All right, so we've got the slide in front of us. After discussions with the CCWG, it was agreed the assumptions should be revised as follows from what was given in the document. Adobe Room support and transcript should be available for all subgroup calls. Staff support should be available for drafting documents. Given the diversity of participants, translation of final recommendations as per Workstream 1 recommendations, and ensure travel support for CCWG members to all face-to-face meetings. There were no objections to the assumption that legal fees could not be estimated at that point, and that an amount should be made available to the CCWG to carry on its work. Any additional fees would have to be formally requested and approved. So basically, what the PCST did was work all of this into the budget. The only minor caveat is that when we're discussing this with the Board Finance Committee on the travel support, it was decided to provide an envelope which was equivalent to 20 participants per ICANN meeting for the next 3 ICANN meetings after Helsinki, given that from a historical point of view, this is about what the CCWG used. So basically, all the requirements are included in that budget, and I believe you had all the details in the document that was attached with the agenda. There's not a lot of complicated explanations or skating around things. I think we tried to get everything in there. On the legal fees, we have to commend ICANN Legal for working with the PCST and the finance group very hard to come up with some reasonable numbers which were in there, because the Board Finance Committee really did need some numbers. So I think that we did our best, and it seemed to be reasonable assumptions to put in there. And that's about my presentation. I'll be glad to take questions if there are any.
Thanks a lot, Bernie. And I want to really stress the outstanding work of the PCSC in turning these documents around into various stakeholders. I think that's demonstrating the value of the small, efficient team at making us cross a new step in terms of accountability for our group management, which is to actually plan budget earlier and better so that it can be incorporated in the ICANN budget as well. And I think there's been a lot of spirit here as well in everyone trying to accommodate everyone's needs. Are there any questions for Bernie on this agenda item? I am seeing, and Kavusi is raising a question about the 20. Yes, the 20, Kavusi, is, to my understanding, the type of number that was drawn from the past experience during Workstream 1. So I think what we're getting here is ICANN's commitment through the budget to allocate the same type of resources to the same type of support as we got through Workstream 1, and I think that's a very useful signal. And the final point I would make before turning to the next agenda item is that the one thing we still need to review, and there's a little bit of work in progress on that, is that we had agreed to review the process to request independent legal advice on the basis of the experience and that we've had during Workstream 1, and obviously the fact that Workstream 2 is slightly different in terms of timing, for instance. And that's work in progress, and we'll be in a position, I think, in the next few days to update the group with a proposal to a refined process for requiring independent legal advice. And obviously, it's going to be discussed with you as well at that point. And with that, I'm now turning back to Thomas for agenda item number 4. Thomas.
Thanks very much, Mathieu. Now, this might be brief as well. Basically, this is about papers that have been produced or are in the process of being produced by our excellent staff team to support the work of the sub-teams working in Workstream number 2. And I would like to invite Grace to speak to that.
Thanks, Thomas. This is Grace Abu-Hamid for the transcript. So I'll be very brief regarding the staff papers or the draft papers that we're pulling together. We're basically pulling together one paper per topic. The idea of the papers is to give the subgroups some context to work from. And we've divided the papers right now into three categories. The first category, as you see on screen, is scope. So what we did for this section is pull the material from the Workstream 1 report. So in the case that you have on screen, I'm showing you the Workstream 2 human rights topic. That topic has a little bit more definition than some of the other topics with regard to scope. So these papers vary a little bit across the depending on the topic in terms of how defined they are with the scope and how many resources we have for each topic. But so take this again as a sample, but I'll still walk you through it. So for the first section, we have scope, human rights. There's a bylaw that we're looking at. There's also a whole section of the Workstream 1 report, a whole recommendation that was dedicated to human rights. So there's a lot more content to detail the scope with. The next section of the paper that we have is a community discussion section. And this may change a little bit depending on the papers. What we're trying to do here is capture where there has been discussion or what discussion questions may be interesting for the subgroup to consider based on prior conversations in the working group. So that's something that we're trying to draft as well. Again, different topics have different level of discussion. Some topics don't have very much discussion on them. The third section is a section on sort of resources available to the subgroup to sort of deepen their research a little bit. And this, you know, again, these are developed, in some cases we have some best practices that we've included. We've also included links to some mailing list archives, things that may provide some more background on community conversations around the topic. These, again, the idea with these papers is that we would give them to the subgroups and the subgroups would refine them. So in the case of most of these ones, if you have any suggestions that you'd like to add as resources or things like that, you can send them to me now or you can get those ready as part of your subgroup work and we can include them as we refine the papers later on. For example, Mathieu's new paper on diversity, I recently included in the diversity resources section just to kind of give a little bit more resource material there. So we're working on getting these ready for Helsinki. We're going to present these to the subgroups hopefully in Helsinki or shortly after, just depending on the timing. There's a lot of work going on internally sort of just to make sure that we're coordinating across different departments to make sure the material, we get as much material as possible for the subgroups. In the case of the SOAC accountability topic, for example, we've reached out to some people in the policy department to get their feedback and some of the staff in the multi-stakeholder strategy and strategic initiatives department that does the organizational reviews. So we're working with different staff. In the sample that you're seeing on screen, this draft was actually developed almost entirely by Elizabeth Andrews, who's on this call. She's a member of the public responsibility team at ICANN, and she's been working very closely with some of the human rights working groups and efforts ongoing in the ICANN ecosystem. So she's helped out with this quite a bit. And you can look forward to some of different staff members' involvement helping you sort of refine the discussions later on as we go through the topics. This is just a sample. We'll talk more about these in Helsinki. If you have any questions or suggestions for the draft, please go ahead and send them to me, and we'll do our best to incorporate these before presenting them to the subgroups. Thank you.
Thanks ever so much, Grace. Cavus has his hand raised. Cavus, you have a question or a comment?
Grace, I think it's good to have these three sections, starting from the scope and discussions, the resources. But what about the output? What is the outcome? We have a text, we have a subject, scope, discussions, resources to do discussions, and so on and so forth, and then the outcome, output. It should be a section of outcome and output. Thank you.
Thanks, Cavus. So the outcome is actually the work of the subgroup. So what we're hoping is that we give these papers as sort of initial research and initial information, but that the subgroups would take this kind of as having the intro level work done for them, and then they can work and develop the recommendations and further outcome from those. So the output is up to the subgroups. That's what we're trying to do. We don't want to lead or give any direction as to the output because it's the community's work there.
Thanks, Grace. I guess it's an excellent opportunity that Cavus gave us to elaborate on this a little bit more. These are basically meant to be background papers that put the status quo of what we had in our report, what the status of our discussions were so far, as well as sources of information in one place so that the sub-teams have something to lean on and then produce their own report. So the report or the recommendations that are going to be produced or proposed by the sub-teams are going to be different documents. So this is just to inform or to help get things going. Brett?
Thank you. Just a quick clarification. I apologize if I missed this. Are these going to be distributed prior to Sunday so that we can look them over, or are they going to be distributed on Sunday to the groups, and so we'll be looking at them for the first time then? Thank you.
Great. I guess that's one for you, too.
Thanks, Thomas. Yeah, Brett, we're working really hard to get these ready in time for the meeting on Sunday. I don't think we're going to be able to distribute them before the meeting on Sunday. So it depends on the topics. Some of them are a little bit more advanced than others, but I think we'll be presenting the majority on Sunday, and if not, shortly after the Sunday meeting.
So thanks, Cavus and Brett, for your questions. Are there more questions for Grace or on the approach as such? Cavus, yes, you mentioned the output again, but let me reiterate that these papers are not to be meant to be the report. These are papers that will likely go into the appendix of a report on Workstream 2 items. So these are just backgrounders, if you wish, for the work to be undertaken by the subteams. Cavus, I think that was an old hand, right?
No, it's old time, sorry.
Thank you. Alan.
Thank you. Grace implied but didn't quite say how things would be handled if a paper is indeed ready before we actually arrive, meet in Helsinki on the Sunday. To the extent that if any of them are ready, they'd be sent out by email so we can read them on planes or whatever, that would be useful. Understand that clearly all of them won't be, but I'm not sure there's any real reason to keep them together as a single unit if indeed any are ready. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. I guess that's not the intention. Rest assured that if and when we get part of the documents ready, we will make sure that we send them to the list as soon as possible so that everyone has as much time as possible to digest and prepare. Great. Thanks for that. I don't see any further hands raised, so we can now move to further preparations for Helsinki and back to Mathieu. And great, thank you so much for this and everyone that's been working on these documents. Thank you so much.
So thank you, Thomas, and thank you, Grace. As you see, everyone's very busy preparing for a successful Helsinki meeting. Our agenda will include several slots where each of us can actually take the floor and speak to one of the Workstream 2 topics. A sign-up process had been set up and circulated to the list. You have on the slide the few people who actually volunteered so far with the Workstream 2 topic. I think we have for each of them a very small summary of the talk. We have more slots available, and although there's a maximum of 3 persons per topic, in order to not overburden with one single topic the overall agenda, we'd really welcome more of you to speak up. I noticed a contribution by NCSG recently on transparency. Maybe someone would be interested in speaking up for a very short presentation. Well, basically the message is do sign up, propose to speak up to one of the topics. We'd really appreciate having the broad vision on each of the topics. And obviously welcome the inputs and the discussions that we'll have around these talks in Helsinki. That is what we expect is going to be the core of the meeting and also provide some momentum into the subgroup discussions that will take place later. Yes, Jorge, I did put in my name for diversity In the list, there was no, unless someone sees a requirement not to have co-chairs in the talks, which I'm comfortable with. So please do speak up on this. The other survey that was underway was the status of the expressions of interest for the topics. Some statistics are provided on the screen, and I have seen Kavu's hand being raised. So, Kavu, you may have a comment, a question, or a proposal, please.
Yes. One comment is that it's good for diversity. We have three. And I think that for some topic like jurisdiction of human rights, we should invite more speakers, more people. We don't want to listen to just one direction. We would like to have a different views from different people, from different aspects, to enrich the discussions. So you could call for volunteers to add to those which can be there's only one, but not for diversity anymore. Diversity of only three. So couldn't we have that one? Thank you.
Thank you, Kavus. And indeed, it's always good to get a balanced view. So in terms of expressions of interest, if we can, that's on the next slide, you'll see that all topics have received some interest. Some attract up to more than 40 active participants, which is very promising. And some of them would need maybe a little bit of help, or maybe they'll be extremely efficient because it goes to 6 or 9 active participants in the last two items. But it's good to see a good spread over the various items. It's still a survey that's open, and certainly we'll review that while in Helsinki to make sure we have everything in place to start the subgroups. And I note an application by James for the board standards. Kavus, is that an old hand?
I don't know whether this figure you have mentioned is for the entire Workstream 2 or just for the Helsinki. If it is for entire Workstream 2, I think we need to talk about the time management. How much time we allocate for each of these topics? There are topics very, very complex, very difficult. We need to have more time. There are topics that are also important, but less crowded or less complex. So perhaps we have to think it over the time management for this, if it is for entire Workstream 2. Thank you.
Thank you, Kavus. Maybe we should get to the next slide to look at the agenda, which is going to maybe answer some of your question. The proposed agenda hasn't moved since the last meeting, is to really talk about the various items through the different talks. We'll definitely not be in a position to have substantive discussions outside the talks on each of the items. But it would be good if the talks could cover a broad variety of items. So that's the way we are suggesting to structure time in Helsinki. And I'm noticing a question by Anne in the chat, whether there's going to be any discussion in Helsinki as to how to train the community in the procedural aspects of the empowerment community. Which is, as you say, an implementation issue for Workstream 1. So that's not on our agenda right now. But I'm aware of a number of ASO and ACs actually working on this. I know there's a session in the CCNSO, for instance, which should address this item. I don't know if there's any... also comments on this. Okay, and I see a point of clarification from Sam in the chat. we'll need to be careful about the wording on the board conduct item. It's a standard of good conduct for community members during the board removal discussions in order to allow the protections of indemnification to be provided. So that is certainly something we'll review in the documents to make sure there's no ambiguity raised. So let's make sure we get the exact wording from the report, and then, of course, the subgroup will take that into account. I see a suggestion by Caruso to extend the allocated time frame for the second lightning talk session. That's noted. We'll try to see how we can tweak the agenda, and I see Greg's hand is up. Greg.
Just a brief calendar question. Will we know in advance which topics will appear in which lightning talk session? There may be some people who are primarily interested in a subset of the WS2 topics who are not gluttons for punishment and may just want to come for part of the meeting. Present company accepted, I'm a glutton for punishment.
Thank you very much, Greg. I think that's a reasonable expectations, and we'll do our best to provide more visibility on this. It might be short notice, however, because as mentioned, we are still collecting people signing up. So I guess the agenda might be evolving until quite late, but we'll try to provide some general idea before the meeting starts. We know from the Frankfurt experience in the face-to-face we had in Frankfurt that sometimes people come up with an idea during the meeting and may request a slot at this point. So we'll try to remain flexible for that, which obviously for people who do not enjoy our company as much as we do, it might prove difficult. But it's recorded, it's transcribed, so I think we'll get the necessary ability for people who miss something to review it later. And with that, seeing no further question, I am now turning to Leon for any other business and closing of the meeting.
Thank you very much, Matthew. This is Leon Sanchez again. And at this point, I would like to call for anyone that wants to raise any other business other than the Copa America issue. So are there any other business that anyone wants to raise at this call? Greg, that hand is an old hand. Thank you. Okay, so having no other business to speak at on this call, we would like to thank everyone for your attendance, for the very fruitful discussion that we have held on the different topics that we spoke on today's call, and of course wish you a very safe travel to Helsinki, to those of you that will be making it to Helsinki. And we'll see you soon there, and let's have a fruitful face-to-face meeting in Helsinki. Thank you very much.
Thanks, everyone. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, everyone. Bye.
Bye, everyone. See everyone in Helsinki. Safe travels.
Bye.